Welcome to Brandon Hall Group's HCMX Radio, the only podcast in the HCM arena that weaves current market research, HR technology, and industry leaders into each episode. Brandon Hall Group is a research, analyst, and advisory firm that provides strategic insights for executives and practitioners that are responsible for learning, talent, growth, and business results within their organizations. Our focus is on ensuring continuous business performance. Our research practice areas include learning and development, talent management, leadership development, talent acquisition, HR, and workforce management. Our HCMX radio host is Rachel Cook, Chief Operating Officer and HCM Analyst at Brandon Hall Group.
Hi, thank you for listening in today. This is Rachel Cook. I'd like to welcome with me today to our episode, Megan Finale. She is the VP of Operations at Ability. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You've been with Ability for quite some time now. You head up the client experience team overseeing the design and execution of Ability's portfolio of award-winning business simulation programs, executive challenge, business challenge, and management challenge, as well as leading the operations of the company. You've had a pretty remarkable background in your career working with and facilitating business and leadership programs for a variety of corporate clients, including GE, Eli Lilly, and Coca-Cola. So it's great to have you here with me, and that we're going to talk about, a little bit on women in leadership and what holds them back, and really how we, you know, how we can restructure the conversation to help women and empower them to succeed.
Yes. Absolutely. And it's a topic I'm incredibly passionate about, so excited to have it with you today.
I'm excited too. And as we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the challenges that we're seeing and, you know, just really kind of how, you know, how we can drive a different type of conversation to get a different type of result and to really see more women succeed and not be so afraid of failure. But I'd like to learn a little bit more about your background. If you could tell me a little bit more about your journey and how you got here and what has made you so successful.
Wow, it's a big question let me start at the beginning. So I grew up in the Southeast United States and have the wonderful opportunity to go to college there as well, and took on a big job straight out of college that I felt really unprepared for, but jumped straight into at Whirlpool Corporation. And what I learned through that journey was that I could do it if I just worked really hard. And I think that really shaped how I took off with my career from there, because it was really focused on working really hard, which I have through the years shifted to how do I work smart rather than hard. And that has allowed me to jump into what I do today, which is doing leadership and development trainings and helping people really think through how do you show up as the best version of yourself, whether that's being the hardest person working in the room or the smartest person working in the room, or just thinking and being aware of how you show up. And it's something that I'm incredibly passionate about and so thankful for all the mentors and bosses and leaders that I've had in my life who have helped me work through that transition and think through that through the years.
Well, that's great. And it really is about being your best self, and that is, you know, that, you know, there's always things that we can do better, and sometimes enough's enough, but you know, we need to figure out what does that mean. Can you tell me a little bit about females and some of the things that you see, kind of how they default to certain behaviors that trends towards the desire for perfection?
Yeah, so I don't know about you, Rachel, but I have an absolute fear of not being perfect. and I think it goes from everything from choosing the perfect outfit for the day to making sure my makeup isn't running by 3 p.m. to making sure I'm saying the exact thing right as I am in this very moment as my internal conversation is running. And I think that it definitely shows up for so many of my girlfriends and the people that I directly work with in this fear of not saying or doing the perfect thing. And I also see it hold myself back, and I don't want to speak for everyone, but I'm sure that my experience resonates with some of your listeners, which is that in that space of trying to be so perfect and always get it right, there's a loss of opportunity to be surprised, to create the space for new things to happen that lead to new ideas or new opportunities. And I know I see that in, like, as I take it from my personal experience to work. I mean, when I get so focused in on, well, this is the way I've always done it, and I know it's going to turn out perfectly in this space, and then getting so focused on that and struggling to create the space for these innovation to happen, for new ideas to form, I can see, and I have to be really vigilant to where I'm doing it so that I can really open myself up to possibility and what is there for me in the future and what is there for this project that I'm working on that simply just needs a little air to breathe for it to come to life.
That's so true. And we've seen, and I'm sure you're familiar with, the imposter syndrome, where I've interviewed so many different women and leaders from all different types of industries and across the world. And, you know, even some of the most senior ones with PhDs, you know, they've even shown a level of insecurity and, you know, and at some point in their career, and even at the level that they aspire to be or where they have achieved to or accomplished, they still struggle with the ability to feel confident, or, you know, they don't always feel that they're certain that they should be in the position that they are if they have the right skills. And, you know, this just is just too common still.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And I was actually listening to your podcast with Dr. Cash last week. And I found it fascinating that from their study at Success Finders, that whole concept of women often asking, what will happen to me if I fail? And it continually comes back to an emotional connection or an ego connection to the failure, whatever it is. And what I'm out to create and what I'm super passionate about in women in leadership is, how do we disconnect the emotion and the ego from failure and not make it mean anything? What if it didn't mean anything that we failed? What if it was just an experiment that we ran and it didn't work? That eyeliner just doesn't work on me today, or that huge initiative to shift my classroom training to the virtual environment, I didn't get it right this time, but I will next time. And it doesn't mean I'm incapable, but it means that I know what it's going to take to be successful by knowing what doesn't work. And if we shift the way we see that, if we shift the way we see failure, what's possible on the other side of that?
Mm-hmm. Very true. And I also see that we're too critical of each other. And I think that is what leads to the insecurity and the desire to be so perfect. Because even if we don't want to judge another woman or another leader, we do. And I'm not sure how we kind of get away from that. But I think knowing that we do, and happens at a very young age, and not even think about leaders, but even in the playground. And I have a 5-year-old daughter, so I see how sensitive she is compared to her brothers. And
yeah,
they never have conversations about so-and-so said this about me, or she doesn't want to play with me today. And it's so sad. And you see the same kind of dialogue sometimes with the boys, but they just brush it off and they don't even care. They just keep moving forward. But
absolutely,
women and young girls, you internalize it. And I think that then creates your self-doubt, and that perpetuates that perpetuates into who you are over you know, and how you develop.
I couldn't agree more, and I think that how we stop it is by looking as how we be less critical of others, is that we look at why we're being critical of that other person, because I would challenge that our how critical we are of ourselves, that internal conversation we have about how much worth we drive individually directly reflects on why we're critical on the others. So if we're able to truly see the value that we individually drive, that the confidence that I have in myself, I'm going to be more confident in others, and I'm going to be less critical of others when I'm more confident and less critical of myself. Because I think it all starts with our own internal conversation and how we see the world and how we see ourselves to propel that forward. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And a good example, and I feel that more young girls and women need safe environments to exercise their ability to lead and to fail and to experience, you know, feedback and not take it so critically, whether or not they're doing the best they can. And yesterday I was at a Girl Scout meeting, and I wasn't in Girl Scouts when I was young, but it was so refreshing to see, you know, we're getting ready for the cookie sale. And mm-hmm. At first I was like, oh my goodness, how am I going to sell 100 boxes of cookies on top of everything
I'll buy three. I'll get you started.
But it was really cool. They had these different stations where they had a makeup store where they prepared them what to say, and they had a cash box and choose five, and you know, there's different ages there. But so early in teaching them these skills and how to sell, how to negotiate, how to greet someone, and then, you know, they also had goal setting of what they want to, how many do they want to sell. So her number was 8,000. So if you can imagine, wow. 8,000 boxes. I'm like, that's a bit ambitious, but I like where you're going with this. So I
dream
think,
big.
You know, fast forward, if we can also, and I feel that's where we're heading. We're creating more networks, more communities of champions, more conversations around driving awareness and creating these safe and different opportunities than women may have had in the past will help change that conversation. Don't you agree?
I couldn't agree more, and I think it's imperative for us to have those conversations with these young people. My brother-in-law this weekend, I was with him, and my sweet niece, who's seven, got some purple goo in her hair, and there was this, and she's in an indoor soccer league, and she was really upset because this other girl was being mean about it, and I just loved how brilliantly he coached her through it and said, hey, so you have purple goo in your hair. What is it? Does it mean anything? Like, she's just, there's something happening with her that makes her not happy about the fact you have purple goo in your hair. Like, does it matter? And she's like, no, I'll just go wash it out. He's like, great. So go wash it out. And it's like, it didn't mean anything. And I think as we help these young girls understand. Be supportive, to think through and be supportive of one another and pause when things are said to really think through it. I think we can propel them and set them up for a more powerful future.
Absolutely. And this is, we talked about failure, and one of the things that hold women back from moving forward is that fear of failure. What are some of the other things that you think that we can change to redefine what it means to fail and succeed?
Yeah, I think it's that we change the way we see failure. We all grew up, speaking of being young women, we all grew up doing science experiments and doing those fun, can I make tennis balls come back to life by putting them in the dryer, or can I grow plants under different forms of light? I mean, we all tried those types of experiments, and it was fun because in that space, you didn't know what was going to work, and you just tried different things, and then you found the winner. winner of the outcome. And I think that we should approach that type of fun experimentation with the way that we approach how we go to work every day. I'm a big fan of this really powerful decision-making framework that basically challenges that in the space of controlled failure, and I say controlled failure very specifically because I think there needs to be the rubber lanes, if you will, on bowling. When you bowl and you set up the rubber bumpers and you know that the ball is going to stay within a specific place and eventually get to the winner at the end with the pins, what if we set up the experiments we have, like the rubber bumpers, to get to the pins at the end of the bowling lane and know that, hey, it's going to hit the bumpers every once in a while, which means that it might not look perfect and it might not succeed perfectly every single time. But at the end of the day, we know it's going to get to the pins and we know that it's going to be wildly successful because it's going to knock them down and get me closer to the highest score or get me closer to getting to that next job or getting that role or finding the solution to this big hairy problem that we're dealing with in our work or industry. But until we're willing to allow the ball to hit those rubber bumpers, we're not going to get there. And so what does it look like to reframe failure and imperfections as the pathway to success rather than a sign that we're incapable of being successful?
Fascinating. And is this a certain type of framework that you use at Ability?
Yeah, we should. Yeah, we sure do. So it actually came out of a really powerful leadership development course that we built for a large technology company in Europe. And we were very excited when they said, you know, we're adopting this framework and we really like to understand how it works with your simulations. And as we dug into it and really saw the power of it, we have fully adopted it over the last 6 to 9 months here at Ability and how we approach things and how we look at how we're taking on new projects and tackling new product lines that we're bringing to the forefront. And what is really powerful about it is there's four contexts, if you will. And I'll encourage all of you all that are listening to go out and read it because it's far too complex of a idea for me to explain here in 3 minutes or less to get all of the juicy details of. But the idea being that there is a world in which we get we know exactly how to do the job. So it's almost like it comes with a playbook. And we get a question, we flip to page 45, and then we have the step-by-step instructions to work through that. And that's the simple context that I think so many of us start our careers out doing in following the best practices of those that have come before us. And as we become experts in those best practices, we start to become subject matter experts, which allow us to know what has worked in the past and allows us to know what hasn't worked in the past. And so we start to move into the world of good practices where there's lots of different options, if you will, but there's not one perfect option. And so there you've got to weigh the risks and benefits and you've got to choose how to move forward. And I think so many of us, as we are all dying to be perfectionists and are afraid of failure, can get stuck in this world because it's comfortable to be the expert. It's comfortable to have all of the answers. And what I think is there for us is to challenge ourselves to say, well, how do we get even better answers? And the only way we find out what's possible in a world of unknowns in a world of ambiguity is by running experiments to then become even more experts in what works and what doesn't work. And that's what really shifts us over into complex environments, into worlds of unknowns and ambiguity. And when you don't know what the path forward is, you have to experiment to figure it out. You have to experiment to find the path forward. And when you experiment, you have to fail at times. But if that failure is instead the road forward rather than a sign of incapability, if that failure is seen as the way you are successful rather than showing people that you can't do it, that's how we're going to propel ourselves forward. And that's how we're going to be able to carve out the path and be the executives that create the vision for the future that others might not be able to see because they're stuck in past practices, which essentially best practices are past practices. And so how do we create the future rather than being connected and attached to the past?
Can you give a couple examples of successful or creative experiments that women should take to see, you know, what their potential or how they can expand on where they are?
Yeah, so I just want to make sure I'm understanding the question right. So are you asking what are some steps women can take to shift to being more innovative? Is that what you're asking?
That's a good question. I think it's like, what experiments, or, you know, for example, I'm taking it as a great experiment that companies do, I think, for giving their employees opportunities, and especially women, to experience what another position might be like. So cross-functional training or cross-functional projects, or, you know, moving into different roles for a period of time where they have the ability to go into a different department where they may not necessarily have had training in, but just to give them exposure to new experiences. Is that how you define, you know, taking on new experiments to create new ways of thinking and new abilities and skills?
I think that is an awesome example. I think that speaks directly to one way that you can absolutely innovate, because the risk is that this person shifting cross-functionally could be unsuccessful, but the mm-hmm. ultimate success is that if they are, then they're adding a whole new perspective to something that could propel it forward. And in that space, there's a lot of opportunity to find the success. And so that's one excellent example of one way that we can absolutely support women leaders and seeing what else they're successful at. I think of a project when about 4 or 5 years ago when everyone was really starting to first get hungry with switching training from the classroom to virtual. And we were trying to figure out, how do you run an online simulation? I mean, how do you run a classroom simulation online in an Adobe Connect platform or a WebEx platform? And what does that look like exactly? And so we set up specific parameters around, okay, we know that the net promoter score for the participants can't drop below this space, and we know that that based upon what we've learned, that we really want to keep the lecture content no longer than 20-minute clips, and the rest we want them in experiencing the simulation. But how do you do that in the online space? And so we ran several different versions of it, and they weren't always successful, and it required me to get clients on board to be partners in this experimentation with us as we were growing that out in an overall effort to make the experience ever more better for them. And it was uncomfortable at times, because I love getting on client calls and them being like, that was amazing and I loved everything about it, as I think we all always want to have that post-mortem conversation, and we just were in the space of trying to get there. And so that's another way of setting up those parameters in that experimentation. Is we had to create the space for brainstorming, and we had to create the space for imperfection, and we had to create the space for healthy tension that allowed us to not always be successful, but be in constant conversation to ensure that everybody was getting what they needed and everyone had a voice in propelling it forward.
That's fascinating. That's great. And I just have one more question for you, Megan. So we've talked a lot about complexity and decision making, helping women redefine what it means to fail and to succeed. Now, what is, from your perspective, what are some of the things that we can do, or that we should leave others in thinking about? How can we take action on all this information?
Yeah, I think that there's four key things that I always keep in mind when I'm trying to think through, am I getting stuck in what I know, or am I being open to what I don't know? And so I think the first thing you can do is find somebody who effectively counterbalances you. I'm ever thankful for the partnership I have with our CEO. He is a visionary. He's constantly pushing us to think bigger and better, which is brilliant and exactly what a CEO CEO is out to do. And I counterbalance him in the fact that I'm very process oriented, and I want to make sure that we move in a structured way that ensures that we have continued success. And so there are moments where his visionariness overwhelms me, and I can literally feel my body kind of tensing up in those conversations. And I really like to take a step back in those moments and say, okay, where am I not being open to a new innovative idea here that really could propel us forward? And where am I getting stuck and where I'm really comfortable? And I really appreciate the fact that he also feels counterbalanced by me. And when he's thinking really big and visionary, that he then also gets counterbalanced by us moving more strategically and process-oriented. And so first I would say, find your counterbalance that's going to support you in creating that healthy tension of moving things forward and pushing you to think more innovatively. And then the second thing I'd say is be open to that. Like, find the space to be open to that counterbalance, to be open to that healthy tension, so that you can really welcome the brainstorming and the ideation and the discussion that opens you up to really being seeing what's possible. The other thing I would say is create expectations. Be clear with others on what are the boundaries that you're setting that create safe risk, that create that space where you still feel as though you are confident it's going to be an overall success, and you know that there's space for those imperfections to show up, for those potential failures to bubble to the surface, and then step back as a leader and watch those occur. Hand it off. Be comfortable with somebody else doing it in a way that's different than how you might do it, but micromonitor it. It's a great concept. I didn't say micromanage. I said micromonitor. It's a great nugget I got from this wonderful book called Leadership Dubai Style. And the idea being that be watchful of everything that's happening, but be very intentional about when you choose to step in to counterbalance it or to change the trajectory, because there could be a wonderful idea there that looks very different than how you would have done it. And now you're in a position to see the patterns that emerge of what makes things successful or unsuccessful, to create the knowns, to create the path forward, to create what's out there and possible in how you're going to propel your organization forward and how they function. And the last thing I would say, and most important, is be comfortable with that failure. Be comfortable with that imperfection. And what that looks like is changing what it means. Remember that bowling lane example. Create the bumpers and stay focused on the pins at the end of the lane. And know that even though that bowling ball is going to bounce off of those bumpers all the way down, it's going to finally find the pins, and it's going to be able to knock them down and create a huge success for you. And so be comfortable with the process that that is going to get you to the end success, because failure means nothing. It doesn't mean you're incapable. It doesn't mean that you aren't doing a great job. What it does mean is that you are figuring out the path forward to what the future of either your career or your organization's success is. And that's what future leaders do. That's what really successful leaders do, and how women can really embrace it, to really step into it.
I really love I love the terminology is the micro monitor, because, you know, too often I think our employees fear that we are micromanaging them, but then when we're not there and we're not giving them that level of support, then they feel that they're not getting the support and the environment that they need to develop and to foster and to succeed. So it's a fine balance between micromanaging and leading. And I think that terminology, micromonitor, that's kind of that halfway in between the two.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's all about knowing what's going on so you feel good, and when you feel good, your employees feel good. When you have confidence in what's happening, they feel confident in what they're doing, and they're out there doing their best work. And you can step in when you feel like you need to, which I'd encourage you to do less than probably what your natural disposition or default behaviors would tell you to step in to do. And I think it allows everybody to really fulfill their full potential of what's possible.
Right. Megan, thank you so much for the discussion today, and I really enjoyed getting to dive deeper into some of these areas, and I feel like we have so much similarity in how and how we feel about what's happening, and I only, you know, our vision and our desire is to make a difference and to shape, you know, the future in a positive way and to bring more of these examples to the forefront, and we hope to do so again. We're hosting our third year, our Women in Leadership Summit. It's going to be on May 1st and 2nd at the Marriott Harbor Beach Club in Fort Lauderdale. Megan, I hope you can join us this year. We're really excited about the topics, and again, the last two events, we just walked away so empowered, and we're really creating this community of leaders and champions where they can go back and be energized and to bring, you know, to fuel them in their mission. So we're very excited about what we're doing, and I'm really happy to be on this journey with someone like you, Megan, and I look forward to many more discussions. So thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you, Rachel. What you're doing with the Women in Leadership Summit at Brandon Hall is just inspirational and incredible, and I was just thrilled to join you today and look forward to joining you in May.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of the day, and thanks for all of you listening in. Take care.